Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Now at Menards, save big on everything for your landscaping project. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Plus, get fast free estimates when you use our landscape design program available in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. Also, check out the great deals from our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Play, where the Lorehounds, your guides to pixel-based adventures. I'm John.
I'm Brandon, and this is our second podcast for the video game, The Last of Us, Part 1.
In this episode, we'll be breaking down the characters, plot, and gameplay of the second half of Naughty Dog's The Last of Us, Part 1, beginning with the fall portion of the game.
Before we get started, quick reminder that you can send feedback to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Or leave us a voicemail at thelorehounds.com/contact, and we'll get to those questions in the next episode.
If you're enjoying our coverage of video games or any of the shows we're covering and you'd like to support us directly, head over to patreon.com/thelorehounds and subscribe today for early and ad-free access to every episode. Of course, you can always find all of our ad-supported episodes on our public feed. Just search for The Lorehounds on your podcast application of choice.
Another quick ask, please take a moment to rate the podcast and leave a review if you feel so moved. Ratings and reviews help other people find the podcast, which helps us make more podcasts.
This month, we're covering our season wrap-up of The Last of Us, The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, and Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus, but we'll get more into that in the outro. So, Brandon, let's issue our spoiler warning now. We are going to be talking full spoilers for the full game, The Last of Us Part 1. We're not going to go into The Last of Us Part 2, so you don't have to worry about that. But we'll be discussing the game, the first game, full spoilers, and we'll talk all spoilers in the show, which now, in contrast to our first podcast on the game, we have seen all of.
Yes, we have. And it was glorious. If I, spoiler alert there, I liked it. But yeah.
It was great. So if you haven't played the game yet, or you watch the show and you don't want to get game spoilers, you're planning to go back to it, then hop off now. But if you want full spoilers, this is the podcast for you. So why don't we get started and head into the season of fall?
Yes. Okay. So thank you again to IMDb for the very succinct what do we call these?
Synopsis?
Synopses, sure. Thanks again for those. We're going to get through that, and then we'll kind of pepper in what we thought about that little chapter there. So, starting in the fall. In the fall, Joel and Ellie finally find Tommy in Wyoming, where he has assembled a fortified settlement near a hydroelectric dam with his wife, Maria, played by Ashley Scott. Joel contemplates leaving Ellie with Tommy, but after she confronts him about Sarah, he decides to stay with her. Yeah, so this is like a hard cut directly from the the Sam right. of it all of yep. the last yep. bit. So like you go in and it's all pretty and you know, the grandeur of the, you know, nature as compared to like the harsh city and whatnot. But yeah, it's really pretty there. We had to do some swimming as you do in this game. And I was annoyed that like this and like all of the game that you go underwater, there's not really not much loot under there. Like there's usually something for you to find, but there's not like, you know, I was always expecting like some like treasure trove, but nope. I think loot scales based on like the difficulty of the game. So it maybe does. On like easier, you'll find like a whole bunch of shit down there, but not this one. I also noted that Ellie was getting sick of the puzzles. Like she commented on it basically like, oh great, more ladders and more pallets to float on.
Right. You know, we didn't see a single pallet in the show, but we did see some kind of ladder puzzle in last episode. Did. And I enjoyed that. It was a nice nod to the game.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. I was like, I did the point and the point thing. I was like, that's definitely a callback.
Yep.
They after the little puzzle, they do get to like a high five, like a straight up, like the bond of a high five. I love it. And as we're getting to where we can see like the full the dam there, we do find a tiny grave.
Uh huh.
And this is when Ellie kind of she's like wanting to talk about Sam to just like get the shit out of there, to just get it out. But Joel is just completely shutting her down here.
Yeah, which is kind of different from the show, right? I think that they had Joel open up a lot more in the show, and they even had a funeral in the show, which we did not get here. I think it's referenced somewhere in the game, but we do not actually see it in the game.
Yeah, Ellie actually, they kind of reverse the roles there, where Joel is kind of like throwing her a bone, and Ellie is just like, nah, we gotta move on.
Right.
A little bit of that, like, I don't know if it's just the, actress from the show doing like Bella Ramsey doing a painting on the rough exterior to, you know, kind of try and hide it again. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting contrast there.
I think Joel and Ellie really play off each other with that. I think that when they are, you know, grumpy, one of them, usually the other one tries to bring them back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. They're kind of, you know, they're each a leg of a grumpy set of pants.
Sure. That's a good way to put it.
Keep walking forward. Ellie wants to shoot and eat a squirrel, which, you know, they're hungry. That's a sign of hunger there. Want to eat a squirrel.
Uh-huh.
And then we get to the dam. A pretty warm meeting that I don't know if I expected it when I was playing it initially. I was really nervous that that Joel and Tommy had like a bit more beef and maybe it was going to be a contentious meeting, but it was pretty warm.
They
do a "you got old, it'll happen to you." I noted that they used the fucking gate sound. It's
what
the same gate. All right. So it's like a burp, 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 like sound that like once you hear it and note it as a sound person, it's like a Wilhelm scream of opening a gate.
It
is like nails on a chalkboard to me. And every time I hear it, they even do it in the show once.
That's funny.
It is just so rough. I remember it specifically because in whatever version of Castlevania was on the N64, they used the exact same gate sound for like every time you opened a door. And
oh, wow.
In that game, you had to open a door all the time. So you just get this sound burned into your brain. And it's just like some like off the shelf sound for doors. Anyway, hate it.
Well,
hate
that is that. Something for therapy. I will when I was listening to the official podcast on the HBO show, Neil Druckmann said he really wanted to show Jackson in the game too, in the first game. But because of the budget constraints, they were not able to pull off the whole town. And that's why they had this whole interaction happen at the hydroelectric dam. And then they just described the town.
Yeah. Yeah, you do get a glimpse of the town at the end, but that's it. They just didn't have the budget to do the town. As we're getting a little tour as well, we get to meet a horse, which you can actually press the horse. You press triangle to pet the horse, which is cool. And like I noted that the people really kind of seem to have their shit together. Like this is a real glimpse at a society of people.
Yes.
Which is cool. They care about each other. They name they call out each other's names. It's like a huge sort of contrast to like the solitude that Joel and Ellie have gotten used to over all this. Where 100%. Everyone's an enemy.
And you want that for them, right? I think that by the end of the game you're hoping that they go back.
Yeah. They do the split up here where Ellie goes with Maria and Joel goes with Tommy. And Tommy actually describes that he went to Texas stop by their home and gives, he tries to give Joel a picture of Ellie, where Sarah. She's holding, Sarah, that's right. I have it wrong in the notes. She's holding a soccer trophy as well. And I did take a screenshot of that. Anyway, Joel just gives a, I'm good to this like tremendous gesture of like trying to find a picture. And like, it's just one of those like, damn, Joel, like he's really damaged, obviously, by this thing that happened. But like, I don't know. I think that's Tommy went through all the trouble to get that photo and just to like, nah, thanks. I'm cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It was sad to see him shut down like that. I think show Joel would have taken it. I think he, at least by that's the end good. Of the game, is ready to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if end of the game Joel would have taken the picture. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. We get introduced to a dog named Buckley, who also you can pet with Triangle. And then they get the plant running, and Joel spills all of it to Tommy. And he basically just tries to offload his burden of getting Ellie to the Fireflies to him.
Uh-huh.
And then, much like many other points in the game, whenever things get tense emotionally, boom, an attack happens.
Right. But that's something that I almost missed in the show was, I think that the infected felt omnipresent in the game. I think that when you had, you know, like you said, every time that you get to a point where you're making progress in a conversation, all of a sudden, everything has to stop and you have to go face a threat. And that's something that has really impeded the emotional development and the emotional connections of these people. And I don't think we got that in the show. That was my one critique of the show, is not enough infected. And not because I want, you know, gore and I want Walking Dead level violence, but I just needed to see more of why it was so important that we needed a vaccine and why society is still this beaten down.
Yeah, because I mean, at a certain point, even people fighting people, you know, people don't fight to the last man. They don't want to fight. They want to be comfortable right. and healthy. It doesn't, like, the presence of monsters does really change shit up, because they don't care about fighting to the last man. They will.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I felt like we just really wrecked him in this fight. Yeah, so Maria's just not happy with, because Tommy eventually agrees to take Ellie, and Ellie must have overheard it, because she rides off on a horse, and then we have to do this kind of badass chase. It wasn't an infected that we were fighting, by the way. It was, I can't remember which faction of dudes. This must have been just raiders in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Non-specific NPCs.
Pretty much. Just people who wanted our shit.
Right.
I felt like the horse controls were actually pretty damn good, and there's a great music cue that plays through as we're going. It's the theme, but slow and melancholy, on played on a lone guitar, because like, it's just, you know, Ellie's really fucking sad here, because she finally thought her and Joel were getting through a breakthrough. It looks like I named them the Marauders, so we have to do a little fight with them. And I like, this is a one thing I noted, that like, when Joel is in the middle, like he doesn't pick up the gun or like, you know, a box like he would in a lot of other video games. He just directly reaches into the mag or the chamber and pulls out the ammo like one by one, which I think is fun.
Yeah.
We eventually get to Ellie at a ranch, and Joel really, really loses this fight with Ellie. The fight is pretty much blow for blow in, like, repeated in the show. Like, they really didn't want to change this, because it's really kind of a perfect fight. Where I noted that Joel is using being an asshole as armor.
Right. The fight with Joel is very hard to watch. I mean, I love how Ellie really opens up, and I mean, Ashley Johnson really just sells the scene. So in the official podcast, they say that Ashley Johnson improvised the placement of fucking in everybody fucking except for you, Joel. And really, that is beautiful, because as Neil Druckmann says, it's an imperfect line, right? It's an imperfect placement of the curse word, because she's just so emotionally vulnerable there, and she's so, you know, in her feelings and not thinking logically, not planning out every sentence. And that's something that you don't get a lot in this dialogue. I mean, you watch Game of Thrones, sure, there's emotionally tense scenes, but most of the time the dialogue is polished. You don't get a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, which really, like, obviously using actors and mocapping and all of that really added a sense of reality to this whole proceeding.
Right.
Which, you know, is, I think, one of the reasons why the game stands the test of time the way it does.
Right.
Especially like just emotional, the emotionality to make up a word for it.
Right.
But yeah. So as before, as we reach the crescendo of this, we're surrounded by those bandits and then we fight our way out. And much like in the show, Joel changes his mind. And instead of going with Tommy, Joel wants to take Ellie himself for some reason. But anyway, it's on to the University of East Colorado. And Joel bids his bro farewell.
So what happens at the University of Colorado? I wonder what.
Yeah, I wonder what it could be. So Tommy directs them to a Firefly's enclave at the University of Eastern Colorado. There, they find the university abandoned, but learn that the Fireflies have moved to a hospital in Salt Lake City. As they leave, they're attacked by bandits, and Joel is severely wounded.
Did you do the notes in this section?
The notes. I can't recall.
Because the notes in this section were excellent.
Really?
This was where you had... Oh, the voice recorders. I'm sorry. The voice recorders where you have the doctor basically, you know, saying, oh, we're testing the monkeys. Oh, they want me to get rid of the monkeys. And he decides to free the monkeys, and one bites him on his way out. And the monkeys are infected because they were testing them.
Mm-hmm.
And you eventually find his body with a gunshot in his head and a pistol in his hand. So... It's sad, but it was a very interesting story for this game. I mean, again, the notes and the voice recorders and the found footage basically is some of the best material in the game.
Of course, and most of which I ignored, or at least I didn't actively hunt as much.
Right.
I did like the voice lines because I could continue playing and not sit there and like, you know, screech everything to a halt. Which, you know, it turns out I had plenty of time to play through, but I enjoyed the pace that I played it at, so. I wouldn't take it back for a second.
There you go.
Couple fun things. Joel explains football as we're rolling up to the school to Ellie, because she just has no idea, obviously. The horse they named Callus, which is fun as a Destiny person. That's like one of the main villains in Destiny right
now. That's
fun. Yeah, so it's funny because Callus is like a giant rhino alien man, to just like casually, happily refer to this horse as Callus. Pretty cool. Also, we find a fucking flamethrower. Which is neat. I did not expect a flamethrower.
We love the flamethrower.
Right. I had no weapon spoilers, so this is one I just didn't expect at all. Ellie compares sports to idol worshiping, and she asks Joel if they were idol worshippers when it came to sports, to which Joel said, "Hell yeah," which yeah. I really enjoyed. Like, anytime we get human Joel, it makes me pretty happy.
Yeah. He's a good dude once you get to know him, maybe, until the end.
Yeah, maybe. We find some runners, which is always fun to fight them, and a puzzle. Unfortunately, I used up my hatchet. I had a hatchet here, which I was really loving. I really appreciate that someone actually says something when the coast is clear when I'm playing. That's like, it's pretty nice for the tension for me, because like, obviously, like in video games, you get like, you know, the music plays, and then sometimes whenever you're done fighting, the music will stop.
Uh-huh.
But usually, like, if we're done... Ellie or Joel would be like, all right, that's everything. Or, you know, like, you know,
uh-huh.
So it really is like it allows you to take that quick breath.
Right.
And also I noted that I really enjoyed the kind of ripcord mechanic when you pull that on a generator. It's just a simple little tippy tap puzzle, but I enjoy it.
Oh, they annoy me. They annoy me because I mess them up half the time.
Maybe it's the DDR in me, but I enjoy tapping rhythmically.
Fair enough. Are you a fan of the Persona rhythm games? That's the only rhythm game I usually play.
I've never played one, but I'm not opposed to it.
They're pretty fun. I mean, that's not something we could really cover on a podcast. It's basically just, you know, yeah. Mashing buttons, but it's a lot of fun.
I believe it. This is where we get into Ellie explaining that she wants to be an astronaut and Joel a singer. And then we see a monkey, which, you know, I at this point, I hadn't been spoiled at all. So, like, maybe I had? No, I can't remember. Either way, I was delighted to see a monkey. And then the sad shrine, I believe, is the reference that I saw before of the man that you were talking about, the doctor.
Right. Yeah. He's dead. Pretty dead.
He's dead as fuck. Some more of the fun things I found. I found a PS3 in some weeb's room, which was really neat. because obviously this is a PS3 era game. Right. So it was... pretty cool just seeing like a pristine, like the original big fat PS3 right there, playing it off of my PS5. It's just right. Like, wow, what a cool time capsule. all this is in like a dorm, and there's big spores and a bloater fight, which was, this is my favorite bloater fight in the game, because it was really cramped. There were a lot of other infected Roman, or they were actually clickers in here. And then the one big bloater that you got to run around. I wasted a lot of shotgun ammo. I didn't actually use the flamethrower for this fight, which it feels like maybe it would have been the perfect place for it, but I just didn't use it.
Hmm.
Lots of other fun things in here. We get another Jack and Daxter reference and Uncharted like board games and stuff.
I do like when a developer will sneak in other works.
Yeah, especially this one, because like, you know, these are very important games to this particular developer's like fan base. So I thought that was right. Cool. Back outside and on the horse, I liked Joel's like kind of built-in dialogue of scooch every time he needed to get back on the horse. Because you'd hop off the horse, Ellie would scoot up to be like the main pilot of the horse. I don't know what you'd call that. And every time you get back on the horse, he goes like, scooch, to get her to move.
Right. Yeah, that's fun.
Through here, he's also sort of explaining some stuff about his life, like that he was married for a while, but that's all he'd get into, and that he had Sarah Young, which checks out. I mean, yeah, obviously, yeah. This that's is his personality. 20 years. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he's still a spry man after 20 years of this outbreak and stuff. And, you know, Sarah was Ellie's age whenever she died in the beginning of the game.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
It really kind of paints the timeline there for Joel.
I think they named him as 36 in the show, and Sarah was, what, 14? So, yeah. 22.
That's pretty young. Pretty young for a parent.
Yeah.
We find another monkey upstairs. That's, here we go. The doctor left the voice recorder here. Joel is being impatient this whole time. And they go on to St. Mary's in Salt Lake City after they find out what's, you know, where all the doctors fucked off to, basically. They get ambushed by more bandits, and ouch, I put the rebar thing happened.
Yeah, so what did you think about this compared to the show? Because the show, you know, we have the baseball bat. This is way more gruesome.
Yes, it is. So in the show, I didn't realize what it was at first. I had to, like, watch it a second time, because it looked like a railroad spike.
Oh.
I didn't realize it was a broken bat, but yeah, the rebar incident, like, that's just such a, like, you know, nightmare incident that happens to construction workers all the time, falling into like a pit of rebar and you get just gore.
Oh, is that a thing that yeah, happens?
People that, you know, people used to die all the time in construction because rebar is just there like that. It's just so dangerous and pointy. And, you know, we're just a big fucking sack of organs. So right, we fall on right. it. We just get poked. And yeah, it's a real rough injury. It was kind of like surprised, like, I don't know, you're getting shot in the game and you're like, all kinds of crazy shit's happening to you, so it makes sense to walk up to, you know, to get up and walk after something like that happens. But yeah, damn, like, the game does surprise me on occasion with the brutality. Like back when we were in the gas station after the ambush initially, and Joel's like, you know, stabbing people's throat with a giant glass door that had broken and stuff like that. So like, yeah, there's another point where the game is just like really showing brutality.
Yeah. It is much more violent than the show.
Yeah, definitely. Which, you know, it can get away with it. It's a video game. You're not looking into the glistening eye, or like real life eyeball of a person. But yeah, the rebar thing happened. Joel doing real, real bad. But he's fighting through the pain this whole time as Ellie's sort of dragging him. Ellie's just like kicking ass, like shooting dudes, getting through here, and she almost loses a fight. And she says, I swear to God, if I get you out of this, you're singing for me. And he says, you wish. You know, she puts a bullet between a bandit's eyes, and then we get away and Joel falls off the horse, much like on the show.
I enjoy Ellie really taking charge here when she needs to. I think that is a big character moment for her.
It really is. Like, you know, you expect Joel to do this for Ellie, but whenever the tables are turned, it's just, she's such a badass.
You know, we can talk about this more when we get into winter, but I think that this game really did fake me out of, is Joel dead the first time I saw this?
Yes.
Did you? I don't know if you knew anything about the future at this point. I don't know how far you saw into the show. Did you think that Joel was dead?
I didn't think he was dead. I am culturally spoiled enough to know that Joel exists later.
Okay, fair enough.
So, like, I was like, you know, if I played it contemporaneously, I might have been, spoiled. But also, like, it is sort of a classic story in general. So I kind of expected him to pull through. I just had no fucking clue how they were going to make it happen.
Okay.
Okay. Speaking of winter, shall we get into it now?
Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll do that.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And we're back. Brandon, bring us into winter.
Winter. During the winter, Ellie and Joel shelter in the mountains. Joel is on the brink of death and relies on Ellie to care for him. Hunting for food, Ellie encounters David, played by Nolan North, and James, played by Reuben Langdon, scavengers willing to trade medicine for food. David reveals that the university bandits Ellie and Joel killed were part of his group. Yikes.
Do you know that Nolan North also voiced Drake from Uncharted?
I didn't know that. I'd never played the Uncharted game, so I wasn't sure. I just know that everything that is a cartoon or video game must feature Nolan North. It is a rule. Like, he's got to be in it. Same with Troy Baker.
Yeah.
If you're not getting both, you're getting at least one of them in almost everything that you engage with.
I just thought it was so funny. I saw him in this documentary. I've referenced the Grounded, the making of The Last of Us. And he talks about how, you know, he was the hero in the Uncharted series, right? So he was this, you know, dashing young man who needed to sound like that and sound heroic and sound normal. And then he said, how do I sound like a total creep and not be just Nathan Drake, but a cannibal? And he goes, wait, what if I take my voice up here and I just make it really creepy? And apparently Neil Druckmann loved it, and that went into the game.
Yeah. Nolan North is really, really talented. Last sort of Destiny getaway, I think. But there's one section, because he plays your ghost, which is your like little robot dude who helps you out. Yeah.
That's funny.
It was originally played by Peter Dinklage, but Nolan North is like an actor that is accessible instead of, you know, unlike Peter Dinklage. And Destiny's a game that goes on forever. Anyway, right. There's a section where back when COVID was keeping everybody out of studios, there's an actor who needed to basically Nolan North apes that actor's voice in character as the ghost, but he did it so well that he had to go back and re-record it bad. So like, he's just such a talented voice actor that he can do things too good, which, you know, what a talent, man. What a crazy, yes, great voice actor. I always love to see him on the call sheet. All right. So in the winter, we start out, I like that the shot is just a cute little bunny in the snow, and then an instantly dead bunny because Ellie's learned how to use the bow.
Which they teased in the show, right? They had a bunny get away from Ellie in the show.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's right out of the game right there. And, you know, she, you know, obviously in the game, she gets it. Here's when I noticed that actually, like, the cutscene leading up to that, I was like, huh, my controller's glowing blue now. So the controller LED is glowing blue for Ellie. So each playable character now gets their own color. Ellie blue, Joel green, and then Sarah was pink.
Hmm.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
Which I had finally came to the realization here. Apparently I put in my notes.
I loved that you start off as Ellie here with no reference to Joel. You could be totally alone at this point. And I wish they had milked it a little bit more in the show, because I think that that was a great shocking moment for me. For me, I was going, oh my God, I'm playing as Ellie. Joel must be dead.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, and it really feels that way because, like, you know, you've got some stuff on you. You have infinite arrows right now, but like, that's, you're pretty much, you got a really bare bones, like, loadout basically.
Right. Do I have to start over on my skill tree?
Exactly. I did not like chasing the deer, by the way.
Okay.
Basically, the game like sort of works you in this big giant circle of trying to chase the deer, and if you're bad at shooting the bow, which you are, mm-hmm. because the bow's kind of hard to use without like building into it, it's pretty rough, and obviously you got to be far away to actually take the shot. And but anyway, it was kind of, I found it kind of grueling.
Yeah, maybe it was a little annoying. I agree.
Yeah, maybe one of the gameplay things that didn't sit as well with age. I found that I couldn't access my gear, and that I did have unlimited arrows, of course, as I mentioned before. And I eventually tracked the deer back to a town, which was cool, after obviously killing it and following the blood trail. And upon doing so, I meet up with David and James, who do want that damn deer, and they're hungry and they're pleading. I read them as being like skittish, because yeah, obviously weird gaunt dudes that are after the game you just caught.
Hey, can we have some of that deer?
Exactly.
that voice, he really gets you.
Yeah, and I thought he looked and sounded a little bit like Sean Penn, which was fun.
Okay.
as playing through. I don't know why. I just got real huge Penn vibes. And another difference from the show, we get attacked by clickers.
Yes. This was the moment that I said this about 100 times in the show coverage. I really think they should have kept this in, because this is the scene that makes you trust David. This is the scene that makes you go, maybe he's not such a bad guy. He helped me get away from clickers. He had been hiding a gun the whole time. This was a big deal. He had another gun, and yes, he did not shoot me with it, and he's helping me with it now.
Yeah, I completely we bonded through battle, and right, I was like fully on board. I actually wrote in my notes like he had another gun, but he seems to be a good egg. Because like he's just like in the show, he sent what's his name, James. He sent James back to grab the medicine. They do the like barter there, and we kind of kick ass. Like they play very much like Ellie and Joel. They fight through, and there's another bloater fight here, and I found it to be a pretty rough fight. There's like, because there's like a couple of different set pieces there as you're making your way through this this like sort of abandoned place.
Yeah.
And it was rough, but we did it, and I was like fully on board.
Yeah.
And just like in the show, but obviously after a fight, David reveals that it was his men, and that he gives like the it was a man who had a little girl with him.
Yeah. You don't like the way he says that, do you?
I really did not like it. Did not like it one bit. And I wrote in my notes, okay, James and David are bad. Apparently, Joel killed his men. Ellie secures the meds from David and fucks off right away. Of course, obviously, they can track her easy in the snow. And that's what happens after they let Ellie go.
Right.
Yeah, this is one where I think they kind of did need the infected man. Just because, like, it is the catalyst for Ellie, like, trusting this dude at all.
Agreed.
Agreed. You know, she had the gun trained on him, and she was like not willing at all to fuck around. This was her food. This is going to be the thing, one of the things that can help Joel get back to, back on his feet.
I agree with their decision to not rely on infected in the show, but I don't agree with their decision to eliminate them as much as they did, because this was an encounter that had a reason to be there, right? This was a character development conflict.
It feels like they only had like a handful that they could use, and like it just kept getting cut for time, yeah, or whatever. Like, I don't know. Unfortunate, but we shall carry on. This is the game. Ellie manages to lead David's group away from Joel, but is eventually captured. David intends to recruit her into his cannibal group. She escapes after killing James, but David corners her in a burning restaurant. Meanwhile, Joel recovers from his wounds, sets out to find Ellie.
We love a cannibal king.
I love it. He reaches Ellie as she kills David. Joel consoles her before they flee. This felt the most tense I think the game had gotten to, especially without the use of like monsters. This very, very human fight, this whole section was incredible, I found. We're fully past like show spoilers for me, so all of this was brand new. I experienced all this without any knowledge from the show.
So you didn't even know if Ellie would survive that encounter, especially with the burning building around her as he's attacking her.
Yeah, aside from, like I said, cultural, like I'd seen her face on the box for the second game.
Right.
Aside from that, like, yes, like I was like, how in the actual fuck is she going to get out of here? So Yeah, Ellie goes to the home base and administers the stuff to Joel. Let me see here. She actually like lays down and sleeps next to Joel, which I found very sweet. But yeah. It's a very similar thing to the show. She gets on the horse to on Callus to try and you know, lead away the bandits, and Callus gets smoked immediately, and you know, they get she gets captured. David specifically subdues her, chokes her out, which is rough.
Yeah.
Ellie wakes up there, and James is fully dismembering a person in the Delicious. Same room. Yeah, really rough. I found the cannibalism, except for that specific part, to be actually more subtly handled in the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, obviously you're not sitting around as, you know, you don't get a David POV where they have to, like, you know, bring up high in the mix the sound of people eating and stuff to, you know, clue that in. You just kind of stumble upon things, especially once Joel makes his way in and you find like the like slaughterhouse area that they have.
Right.
I just found it to be more subtle. Like, they were cannibals, but like it didn't seem like to be their defining character trait. It seemed like another settlement of people led by just this one very capable, if not like, you know, angry man. Yeah. But yeah, so once James leaves after dismembering a person, David comes in and brings Ellie food, and then it cuts over. This whole time, we're cutting back and forth between Joel and Ellie, right. Which, you know, I found helpful that as this, the controller would change color as the POV would change. So I was like, ah, now I'm Joel again. Oh, I'm Ellie. Ellie does a thing where she breaks David's finger. I said, she's a gangster and doesn't take kindly to being kidnapped.
No, she does. I mean, who does?
Of course. I found also that the game is very much improved by the use of headphones, because I was going back and forth between like the living room and then like playing on my like PC setup. And like, man, the sound is like incredible. I don't know if they did like another big pass for the part one release, but man, like everything sounds great because you're getting a lot of like environmental sounds here with like right. the wind and everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they did with the sound, because, I mean, they couldn't have changed the voice acting, really, but I don't know. I don't know what they did with the environmental sounds.
Yeah, because it was just so incredible, and, like, just the spatial sound. Like, you can hear dudes coming and stuff. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that they worked in the, you know, the 3D audio of the, that's like the calling card of the PS5 right now.
Yeah, definitely. So Joel gets some penicillin in him, and seems to be okay. Joel, I find that he is really kicking ass here after he sort of, you know, gets a health potion.
He got one shot, right? Can we agree he got one shot in the game?
Yeah, yeah, one. I think it was just one, yeah. So he captures two bad guys and interrogates them, I put roughly. They do the market on the map, better be the same spot as your buddy says. And, you know, he tells him, and then Joel kills the bad guys. He does the same thing. Oh, don't worry, I believe you.
Yeah. Oh, man. That is the moment where it's your first hint that Joel's the villain, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, Joel is completely unmoral. Like, there's no morality that will stop him
right.
from protecting or from preventing another death of his daughter. You know, obviously Ellie being his surrogate daughter here, but he will never, ever, ever let the same shit happen to him again, ever. Like, that is his one prerogative.
Exactly. He is a very selfish person. I mean, in fairness, she is in legitimate danger here, and for no, there's no, like, good reason here, like, making a cure. This is just cannibals might eat her.
Yeah, which, you know, chippity chop away, stab away, Joel. At least, you know, that's the way I felt playing it. Like, I remember wincing about how brutal Joel did it, but I was like, maybe I would have done the same.
You don't have sympathy for them, right? I mean, they're eating people. And I think from what I got in the game is that they all knew about it. I didn't get what I got in the show, whereas I think that in the show, it's pretty clear that only David and a few others know about it.
Yeah, I didn't actually I didn't think about that too much in the game. I think probably because, like, I wasn't super thinking cannibals, even though I literally watched James, like, cutting up a person. I don't know why cannibals wasn't on the mind until I got into the building as Joel.
Okay.
No, no.
Interesting.
Cannibalism is like a go-to in the post-apocalypse, too. So, like, I don't know. I think they played it pretty well. So, we get back to Ellie from this. They pull her out of her cage, and they're going to go dismember her. And she tells them that she's infected, rather.
Genius move.
Very genius. Such a clutch play. She uses it as her escape tactic after biting David. "You're infected," she says. So this happens just like it does in the show, where she gives James a chippity chop to the shoulder and kills him. Just that shoulder neck junction there, just with a, you know, with a big butcher knife. What a rough way to go. And this is where the David fight happens. And this fight is so tense.
Yeah.
He steals Ellie's gun off of her, and it's pretty much exactly like it is in the show. The building gets lit on fire, so you're just like doing everything you can as Ellie to get out of this, you know, to just not get chopped up by this crazy man.
Yeah. It really feels like you are on your last limb and you are about to die and you better run away. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's the most tense fight in the game for sure. And this is a game where you slaughter a whole hospital.
Right. There's like nothing you can do about it. It's just like that big monster dude from Resident Evil. It's just like an unbeatable foe. And you got to try and figure out how to do it. It's just really tense.
Right.
The music, the environment, literally the building crumbling down around you as this is happening. David not giving a fuck. He's like solely focused on Ellie. It's rough. I noted that I was really loving the cuts back and forth between Ellie and Joel, because it never feels like Joel's going to get there and save her. Like, you never feel like, oh, Joel's going to come through as a hero. Or at least I didn't feel it that way.
Right. Right.
So he makes his way through the camp. He dispatches more bad guys, I put delicately. And he finds Ellie's stuff in what looks like a human slaughterhouse. This is when I was like, all right, yeah, they're definitely cannibals. Holy shit, scary. Like, I think it's very subtly done, which is weird because we saw that earlier, but I was like really taken with like the slaughterhouse. Also, there wasn't like big chunks of meat taken out of these people. They were just kind of like dead people hanging up.
Yeah.
They didn't look very processed. My first job was a butcher.
Oh.
My first like job on paper.
So I hope,
like,
not this kind of butcher.
It was mostly pigs and cows and stuff.
So mostly?
Yeah. Mostly. Okay. Mostly pigs and cows. Chickens also.
Okay. All right. There you go. Yeah,
there you go. It was chickens. So the game actually takes a beat for Joel to freak out, which I find is nice. Every time the game like manually slows you down, and a lot of games use this as a tactic, like Destiny once. You can run around and fly and stuff basically, but like there's like sections where like if you need to see something important, the game will slow you down and go, oh shit, I need to pay attention to this.
Right.
And the game allows for a second to do that, which I think the game actually does later beautifully with the giraffe scene. But we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah.
So Joel presses on and he finds the burning building. So you're like, yay. The LED turns blue and we go back to Ellie, who are both alive. He's being a real weirdo, trying to do his thing and kill her and whatnot. But Ellie gets the upper hand finally and just goes to town with this knife and just fucking chops his face into hamburger meat. As she's doing this, the music sort of takes over as like the main thing. And Joel actually stops her. He calls her baby girl, embraces her, and the music swells and you can't hear any more audio except for just the music, obviously. And then they flee the burning building. David's machete still sticking out of his head.
Love it.
I think it was just so well done, because obviously Joel doesn't get to save her here. Like I imagine
no, but,
a lot of people would have
well,
expected.
He doesn't get to save her from the danger, but he does get to save her from herself. And I think that was important. And I love the show, guys. I promise. There's like 15 hours of me saying I love the show. But this is another thing that I think they should have kept in the show, is Joel sort of being her emotional counterweight. Because I think she's the same thing for him. And I think that that's a big part of their relationship, is being the calming presence for the other one.
It's exactly that. It's if the roles were reversed, it would be the same. Ellie would be exactly able to bring Joel back from the depths of chopping a dude's face into hamburger meat.
Right.
But yeah, that's winner. I really enjoyed the setting, by the way, of just like a lodge, like as a like a post-apocalyptic setting. I thought it was really nice and like cozy, except for all the cannibalism and murder.
Right.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So we get on to spring. Joel and Ellie make their way to SLC. Joel is in good spirits and Ellie is miles away, like just emotionally. As they approach the hospital, Ellie's spirits are lifted as they see a small herd of giraffes. Giraffe? A small herd of giraffe? Is that the plural?
I have no idea. It could be anything.
I actually wrote this synopsis because they didn't have it. And I was like, how are you going to skip that? Anyway, as they approach, they fall into water and are abducted as Joel is administering CPR to Ellie. So this section I find was a great reverse of show, don't tell. Like a lot, most of the times you want to be shown something, you don't want them to tell you, but like Joel is so talkative here. Like He's talking about the weather. He's talking about playing guitar, that he wants to teach Ellie one day. She is just miles away though. Right. Like, just, you know, there's been some time since, because obviously we're in the spring, but she's just, she's got a lot of rough stuff going on in her brain. I found immediately a sad family annihilator RV where yet another father had to kill his whole family because of stuff.
Lovely.
More environmental storytelling that breaks your heart.
Yep.
Ellie tells Joel about a dream about a plane with no pilot.
That's sad.
It is. Like, she's just like I keep saying, just miles away. And she leaves Joel hanging for the human ladder game that they normally play. She, you know, he's supposed to hand her down a ladder, but she runs off very similarly done in the show. She sees a giraffe. This is such a masterful, like, funneling. You know, you're chasing down Ellie here. You never really feel in danger, but like you don't know what she's getting to, and then you see just her standing there next to like a beautiful giraffe. This maybe is probably the prettiest moment of the game.
Yeah, definitely.
I loved the music here, and I found that I find that the game gives you as long as you need to just enjoy the view with Ellie. I'm not sure if it would have cut you off or if you'd have just been able to sit there forever just looking at this with her, because like the game didn't rush you. I felt like it wanted to give you as much time as you needed to just sit in this moment of like a moment of peace.
Yeah.
Which I found really like really emotional in like a beautiful way. Joel tries to give out Ellie, give her an out and to go back to Tommy's. But she's very remorseful though about what she's done. It was a huge personal cost to her specifically to murder a lot of people, but specifically, I think David, like that was a rough one, obviously. I imagine it would be a lot different murdering a person with a gun as opposed to chopping a person's face to bits.
Right. Yeah.
I wouldn't know. And you know, maybe don't write in if you know, but,
yeah. Let's not get confessions in the feedback.
Definitely preferred to not have that. But at this point, Joel is just a completely open book to Ellie, which I think she maybe needs in this moment. She did steal the picture of Joel and Sarah from Maria for Joel. It's the one that Tommy turned that he turned down. Tommy, like, you know, he didn't want to take it.
Right.
He's very emotional getting this, and he says, "Well, I guess no matter how hard you try, you can't escape your past." Thank you, he says. And she seems hopeful after this little bit of, you know, time together.
Yeah, I think so. I think that this really brought her back from the brink of destruction.
I think so, too, especially because of just how despondent she was initially in this this whole section of the game.
She's depressed and traumatized, and this gives her at least a reason to live a little bit. And not that the giraffe is the reason to live, but it's sort of one of the themes of the game, which is life finds a way, right? That there is still beauty in a world that is destroyed for humans.
Yes. And, you know, it was very affecting, I think. And it was just nice to see like a moment where they were happy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We don't get a lot of that in this game.
We definitely don't. So they go into the tunnels. You find more infected in there, a bloater. I actually noted that I successfully used stealth for once because there were there were a lot of infectors and two bloaters. And I was like, I don't feel like shooting these guys for 30 minutes or whatever. So I did it. I was very like proud of myself. We find more deep water and Ellie wants Joel to teach her how to swim. Obviously, this would be a very useful skill for her to pick up.
It sure would.
I find another ladder puzzle, of course, and some more scary swimming, and then we get into the rushing poo-poo rapids. As we're going through here, it's just this gross rapid river, and Ellie is very, very nervous about it for obvious reasons. They're using all this trash to get through it, like, you know, fallen, like, like girders and stuff to get around and navigate. They're on a bus which fell, and we are in for a very rough ride. Where Ellie falls in, she drowns, basically. I think she just loses consciousness in the water, as one does. And Joel just, you know, fights tooth and nail to get to her.
Right.
He administers CPR, and as we were doing that, they're telling her, like, the people who found them are trying to get Joel to put his hands up and to stop administering CPR or whatever, because, you know, it could be dangerous. He does not. He refuses. He's like, you're gonna have to fucking kill me. He doesn't say that, but that's the body language conveys that. Right. Like, yeah, go ahead. I need to, you know, this person's dying. Gets knocked out and is greeted by Marlene when he recovers.
You know, I gotta say, David has been a lot more, David in the Lorehounds, not David the cannibal. David in the Lorehounds has been a lot more generous to the Fireflies than I have. This is one of the reasons why I think the Fireflies are total assholes, and I think that they're full of shit about a lot of things, because you got a lot of big talk about, you know, wanting to make the world better, and he's desperately trying to save a girl's life. And they don't even know, but this is the girl that they've been waiting for. This is the one that is their hope of salvation. And they beat the crap out of him while he's trying to save her and jeopardize her life.
Yeah. That being said, though, a very common tactic is to lure people in with a danger, like a person who's, you know, yeah, quote unquote hurt. Yeah.
He's not even sick. We saw that in the game.
Exactly. So maybe that's what they're thinking. Like, hey, once we you know, we'll take care of her once everything is secured. But as of right now, you got two free hands and a shitload of, I see a flamethrower on your back, bro. So, like, I don't know.
Fair enough.
I kind of get it, but yeah, like, you know.
It's not a good look. It's certainly not a good look when you're looking at it from Joel's perspective.
Definitely not. So we get to the hospital. In the hospital, Marlene tells Joel that Ellie is being prepared for surgery in hope of producing a vaccine for the infection. The Fireflies must remove Ellie's infected brain, which will kill her. Joel battles his way into the operating room and carries the unconscious Ellie into the parking garage. So I noted that this is what I was afraid of. As I was navigating my way through the game, I was really worried that the game was not going to end good. Surprise, surprise, this game ending badly. I was really worried that this vaccine was going to kill her. Or, you know, trying to get the vaccine was going to kill her. So, like, I don't know if, like, people initially, or if you're playing through, did you feel like it was going to be a good thing whenever she got to the doctors? Or did you have this feeling, like, much like if you have a dog who gets rabies, you go, oh, well, just how do you cure it? Or how do you find out if the dog has rabies? Oh, well, you got to cut its head off, split its brain in half, and then you can find out if it has rabies.
Well, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about rabies, so
yeah,
I didn't think about that. I don't know. I think I was kind of looking forward to the Fireflies the first time I played it. Again, this was about almost 10 years ago, but
right.
I was shocked when I heard, oh, but she's got to die to make a cure. That was shocking to me. And part of that is I hadn't watched Game of Thrones and all the other, you know, everything's got to be a tragedy shows. The grim dark genre had not really risen in popularity yet. And so I was naive, and I went in hopeful that the Fireflies would actually have a good solution.
Yeah, I think I was open to that, but I was mostly afraid that it was going to, this whole process would kill Ellie.
But your expectations have been tarnished by years and years of grimdark.
I think maybe that, but also literally just my dog, because I had a dog that got bit by a bat once, and
oh, no.
that's how I found out you know, they can also just quarantine your dog, and if it starts to show signs of rabies, they can do what they got to do. But like, I was like, how do you find out? Like, well, we wait or we cut its brain in half. So I maybe
wow.
that's what was coloring my expectations of this, but I was just really nervous this whole time. I was like, man, we're gonna get there, it's gonna be bad. So like. Yeah, I was less hopeful, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so we continue on here. Marlene leaves Joel with a guard. So Marlene says she's willing to kill Ellie at a quote-unquote at great personal cost, which I was not buying from her.
No, me either.
Yeah, like she... they do less in the game than they do in the show to characterize Marlene.
Yeah.
So, like, she just really came off as, like, cold and detached, whereas Joel is, like a, you know, a father watching his child suffer again. Like, and it's really breaking him here. So, Marlene leaves Joel with a guard, and the guard takes Joel for holding. Of course, Joel gets the upper hand and does a brutal rapid interrogation, I put. He asks the guard once, where are they keeping Ellie? The guard hesitates for a second. I ain't got time for this. Shoots the guard twice. Bang, bang. And then he just fights his way up the up the floors to the hospital where Ellie is. And I noted that he sure is killing an awful lot of fireflies here.
Yeah. Well, you can sneak, right? I mean, there's no obligation to kill every firefly. We're just depraved individuals, apparently.
I was going to say, you know what? I didn't think about sneaking for a fucking second.
Me either. Honestly, I was like, I got to get Ellie. I didn't know if there was a time limit or anything. It was, I was in the same boat as Joel. I don't know when they're going to do the surgery. How much time do I have?
Yeah. And also, like, all these fireflies are dropping fully automatic weaponry, which we haven't really gotten to play with. So on a gameplay perspective, I was having fun picking these guns up and going, ratatatata. It was pretty cool.
Right, yeah.
I found make your way through those magazines real fast, though. So I was kind of still resorting to my old tricks of using my my nail bombs and stuff.
You could just use your flamethrower the whole time, too.
I could have. I think I forgot that I had a flamethrower. There was a lot of passing back and forth between Ellie and Joel for a while there, and I just didn't even think about the flamethrower. I should have. It would have been fun to light all the fireflies on fire.
Right.
So Joel kills all the fireflies, not all of them, but as many as you want to. We find Ellie about to be operated on. I think this can be done in a couple of different ways, but the way I managed to do it is Joel kills the doctor with his own scalpel. I walked up to the doctor, and instead of shooting the doctor or anything, I got hit with a context sensitive triangle in which I used the doctor's scalpel to kill him. Is that how you did it?
No, I think I just shot him.
Right. Yeah, I think maybe I was like, we don't need to kill this guy. So I didn't even like, I think I wasn't going to kill him. I saw the triangle pop up and I did it. And then Joel just kills the man.
On the contrary, if you want to save Ellie, I made this point on our wrap up podcast. If you want to save Ellie and you want to make sure nobody comes after her, the doctor's the guy you got to kill, right? If they can't do the surgery, they're not going to keep coming after her. They might come after you, but they're not going to come after her.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't know what I would have done. Like, if it would have given me an option not to kill him, maybe I wouldn't have. But Joel definitely wanted to do it because he killed him with his own scalpel. I wrote, probably didn't need to do that. We killed him. And I take your point. I think, the doctor's the one who has to die if we need Ellie to be alive, which it seems that Joel very much does.
Right.
He says, I got you, baby girl. He scoops her up and then the music swells. And it's like a direct mirror to Sarah from the beginning.
Yeah, it is.
In just this moment, like of us escaping with like bullets going off behind us and stuff. It's another moment where the game slows you down to just like, you're worried. I was worried that Joel was going to get shot and taken out at this point. Just trying to escape with Ellie.
Oh, yeah? You thought he was going to die here?
Yeah, because, like, as you're escaping, fireflies are, bearing down on you. It's not like in the show where, like, it's an open, like, just you walk to the elevator. Like, you pick her up, and you're getting chased down by fireflies. Like, it's, like, very tense. And meanwhile, the music is swelling in, like, a way that it seems like someone's going to die. So I was just, like, really nervous. But, he gets to the elevator, and at the bottom, Marlene finds him. And she tells him that he can still do the right thing.
Yeah, all right. He puts Ellie down, and she shoots him right there. That's what's going to happen.
Definitely. She's trying to justify her actions. She gets into, like, Anna, who maybe is Ellie's mom. I didn't know at the time.
Yeah, I mean, in the show, they confirmed that, but I guess they didn't really say that in the game.
Yeah, like, she's just full of shit. In the parking garage, Joel confronts and kills Marlene to prevent the fireflies from pursuing them. On the drive out of the city, Joel lies to Ellie about what happened, telling her that the fireflies had found many other people who are immune, but were unable to create a cure and have stopped trying. The pair arrive on the outskirts of Tommy's settlement, Jackson. Ellie expresses her survivor's guilt and asks Joel to swear that the story is true, that his story is true. And he does. So Joel lies to Ellie He kills Marlene. This is very well done. As he's sort of explaining what happened, cutting back and forth to Joel holding Ellie there and killing Marlene. He says that there are dozens like her to Ellie and that they've stopped looking. And to Marlene, he says, "You just come after her." And he executes her. Very cold.
But what's great about this scene is that it fakes you out again, sort of like Ellie being the playable character in Winter, where you see Joel somberly driving forward alone.
Yep.
And then it shows you him talking to Marlene, and then it shows you Ellie in the back seat. And I thought that was perfect.
It was. It's a really good reveal that he just looks in the rear view and sees her rolling around back there, still in her medical gown.
And it was so good that they ended up copying it note for note in the show.
Yeah. Very, very good. I think, was it Craig Mazin's that says, if you change the ending of The Last of Us, then you're fucking like,
you're crazy. A fucking idiot, he said.
Idiot, that's the word. Not to be ableist. But yeah. So they escape. The car breaks down. We're walking. We're Ellie again. And we get back to Jackson. Ellie stops to tell the story about all the loss. And she tells him the story of Riley. A short story. I don't know if this is a change. Do you remember if in the old version of the game that she told the story about Riley? Or is this an addition that they did Left Behind?
I don't know. I think they did, but I only played The Last of Us Remastered, which had Left Behind bundled in it.
Yeah.
So I never played the 2013 original PS3 release. I played the one that came out a year later.
Yeah.
So it could have been a change. I don't think it was, though. I think that was always there.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, that lie that Joel says to Ellie about the Fireflies.
And then the okay.
Yeah.
The okay at the end is just heart-wrenching. And again, I've said this on the TV podcast, that if you're me in 2014 and you have no idea if there's a sequel coming, what a fucking bleak ending.
Yeah, it's really, really rough. It smash cuts to Naughty Dog, we get credits and we get the music. It is a rough lie. I guess just to wrap all of this up sort of here at the end, I didn't listen to your episode yet. I wanted to get your thoughts on the ending without knowing. How bad of a guy here is Joel, in your opinion?
Oh, I think he's the villain of the story.
The entire story. He's the Darth Vader.
I mean, he damned the world.
Yeah.
He took away the world's only chance of a cure. It's gone now. Even if you have Ellie try to do something, the only doctor who knew what he was doing about it is dead.
Right. Now, do you... obviously, you understand why Joel did what he did. I'm not asking that.
Sure, yeah. But
is it completely unreasonable, you think?
Oh, no, it's logical. See, this is a debate we had. You should really listen to our rabbit.
I'm going to listen to it. I just wanted to get it from the horse's mouth before
we had a debate about it. He thinks Joel's insane, and I said everything Joel did in this last section was logical. It was just immoral.
Absolutely. I think he commits the most selfish act you can, and it's because he literally cannot lose a daughter again.
Right. Right.
So he commits the most selfish act possible out of love, and mostly out of fear. Like, it's his weakness that he can't do this. I don't know that Ellie would have wanted to die in that way. Maybe she would have.
I think she would have done it. I really think that she wanted her life to mean something, and I think that was her best opportunity in her eyes. And I think that if you had given her the opportunity, she probably would have taken it. I have thought about this a million times over the last, 9 years.
Yeah.
And I really think that that's the choice she probably would have made. And at the very least, she should have been given that choice.
Yeah, that's where it all falls apart, is that she didn't know. Like, you know, she was just rendered unconscious and that they were going to do it without asking. But yeah, I don't know how much I can call Joel a villain. I can call him...
Well, that's wrong, but, you know.
I know.
You can do whatever you want.
I think that I understand him and that he did the wrong thing, but I don't blame him for doing it. But I do acknowledge that it is the most selfish act that he could have done, even if it is to protect this girl. To protect, the last person he cares about.
Right.
Yeah. Really, it's definitely a very gut-wrenching ending. And, yeah, I had a great time with this one. We can get into Left Behind now, if you like.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then when we get back, we'll have a quick discussion of Left Behind. And we're back. So, Brandon, let's talk Left Behind very quickly. I know we've done a very detailed analysis of the game so far, but with the DLC, let's just talk our major points and our favorite parts, our least favorite parts about it. So here's the synopsis. Ellie looks for medicine for Joel in a dangerous mall, and Ellie flashes back to her last time in a mall in Boston with her first love, Riley, in which they got bit. So, this is a tragedy. This is deeply sad. This is also sort of a beautiful love story, right? I mean, this is young love coming together. I love the way that in the gameplay, they really make the violent gameplay of the main game into a gamified version, right? You know, you have the water guns. Yeah,
like fun, cute mini games.
Right, you have the water gun, you have the fighting game, you have all these things, you know, throwing the bricks in the cars, all these things that are used for violence in fighting the infected and in fighting bandits and all that. And then all of a sudden, it's a game with your friend. I thought that that was really great.
I thought so, too. And I thought, like, beautifully done, because it's you're playing in two different time periods here. You're playing this, like, initial story with Riley, and you're also playing when Joel was unconscious from his bad, bad boo-boo that he got right from the rebar. And it's an obvious parallel because both things are happening in a mall.
Right.
Which obviously, like, you're doing stuff in the modern version of the game, in the modern time of the game, and back to the flashback with Riley. You're doing very similar gameplay things, like you mentioned before. Yeah, and I think it's really well done, like you said, with the bricks. There's actually, like, a genuine jump scare where Brandon, the adult man, Riley busted out of the coffin wearing a Frankenstein's monster mask. She actually scared the shit out of me because like just the fun little cat and mousing that they're doing. Also fun little bits in the Halloween store. There were Nathan Drake and Jack and from Jack and Daxter costumes. No Crash Bandicoot, I might add.
Right.
They must have sold that property off to Sony or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's Activision right now.
Is it?
Yeah. Activision. Blizzard owns it because they just released new ones.
That segment is so fun. You get like a fun Wizard of Oz reference in there. Like they do a lot of like really fun references in this moment. Like you get the Mortal Kombat 2 poster in the very beginning.
Right. Yeah. And they said on the official podcast that they wanted to do Mortal Kombat 2 like they did in the show for the game that Ellie plays in the game. However, they couldn't afford the rights. And so, in the show, they went, oh, wait, we're at Warner Brothers right now. We're at HBO. We could just use this.
And I really did enjoy, though, in the game, how they did, like, the mental, like, Ellie closes her eyes.
Yes.
And you get these cool effects of basically, like, their bootleg, Mortal Kombat fight.
It was so intimate, right? It was so intimate.
It was
to
very
have
intimate. Yeah.
Riley describing the game to her, trying to bring her joy with just her voice. I mean, it was a lovely moment. I actually kind of like that better than what they did in the show.
I do too. I think it plays better in a video game.
Yeah.
Than it does in a show. Like I understand them wanting to opt for the actual game, but yeah, like it is a great moment. The pun book. There's a lot of great ones. They actually use one from the show. Or they use one in the show from the game. Diarrhea is hereditary. It runs in your genes. I played through all of those. I until the game made me stop. I wanted to hear all the puns, which is cool. Also, like they have a fun thing here. They had a photo booth that I enjoyed.
Yes,
and you can go and do the photo booth. I picked the love theme because it gives you like a lot of options, which is interesting. In the main game, you didn't really get any like choose your own adventure shit, but in the DLC it gives you that, and then it's fun in the game. It actually gives you the option to share it to Facebook.
Yes, it does. That's funny, and you can't do that in the show, right? Because that was 2003. I think Facebook was what, 2005 or six?
I think so. It would have been MySpace, I think.
Oh, what a memory! I miss MySpace. That was my first love.
Riley would have been number one on Illy's top eight.
Oh, yeah. And what do you think the song would have been that played on her? You know, you used to be able to have your song that played when you opened up the MySpace page.
Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith.
Oh, that's a good pick. That's a good poll.
I think so. I almost sang it, but my voice isn't back to where it should be yet. When I tried to share it on Facebook, it actually prompted the game to open up Twitter, and I did.
Oh, that's funny.
So I actually shared the like little photo reel you could take.
That's pretty funny.
You can find it at Brandon the Bard on Twitter. We broke the machine, of course. There's like a lot of really fun things in here. And the back and forth going to the actual like fighting that you're doing with Illy, because you're fighting some infected and you're fighting some bandits, David's men.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some really rough fights there too. Like I think, and there's one fight specifically with, I believe I called them stalkers.
Uh-huh.
That's where I was like, these are easily my most hated enemy type in the game because of the way they like hide around a corner. But if you get close, they'll jump out at you. Like I really like, but they don't come out. They like play chicken with you and it's really, really rough. And there's a section of the game where I found that like they even did the puzzles better in Left Behind.
Okay.
Which they're the same puzzles fundamentally, but it felt more intuitive, like the way that you use like garage doors and stuff. Obviously we don't need to get all the way into it, but I feel like even just like the little bit of time they had between Left Behind and the original game, like they had really pushed forward their like puzzle tech.
Yes,
I guess.
Yes. And also, I mean, I think that they didn't have as many budgetary constraints, right? Because you have this massive success of a game. The Last of Us immediately successive. Hit. Successful.
Yeah. So like they were really able to like do that. And like I will say Left Behind felt like a joy to play. I burned right through it in like a day and a half. Is it a short game, like a short DLC? But like I couldn't put it down. It was so fun. The water gun fight was really cool. I found that I destroyed Riley. Like she had no chance against me. Sharp from just playing through the whole game. My gun skill was top notch, but she did 1-1 against me, and then we had to go back to reality. That fight at the very end, where you're about to get to your horse, you're about to get to Callus.
Uh-huh.
She says, "You better be alive, Joel." And then there's this rough fight where David's men are, you get swarmed, and then the infected eventually take over, and you kind of use the infected against, like that was one of the fighting things that you did a lot more in Left Behind.
I agree. And it was very fun, right? To set the infected against the bandits.
Exactly. Like you pit them against each other. Like that's like some of the most fun I had in it. Like just the fighting was so cool, the way that you have to fight different because you're Illy. You're not going to go out there and win a fucking melee fight with these dudes. You really got to use your brain. And I found that they did a really good job with that. And I find that it wraps up very similarly in the game that it did in the show, except that in the game, Riley and Illy gets surrounded by runners and clickers and stuff. And it's a very fun, like where you just got to beat feet away from all these infected. And the ending tussle where in which that Riley and Illy both got bit. It was a really like tense fight there. Just close call after close call. But eventually it resolves to sort of the same thing where it's just them two sitting together and we fight for every second that we get to spend with each other, whether it's 2 minutes or 2 days. We don't give that up.
Right.
And it, you know, the shot, it brings you parallel shots back to present and the past with Illy taking care of Joel and stuff. And Riley suggests they wait out the infection, just like in the show. And
yeah,
just a great, great little DLC for it. And after all said and done, how do you feel about Left Behind in the show? Do you think, do you think they did the right thing by plugging it in there? And do you think Left Behind would have been better if, like, obviously this is the part one, at least as of right now, I can't imagine them re-releasing the game again. Do you think it sits better off to the side as it does now, or should they shove that shit right in the actual main game?
No, I think it's right where it is now. I think that the way that the game plays, I think it's good the way it is. But I did enjoy it in the show at that placement too. I actually think they made a few good decisions, a few good changes in the show. I think that it was better to have a situation where you had one infected and it was just two really inexperienced teenagers fighting it. Right. I did not really buy that these two teenagers were fighting off a horde.
Yeah, which, I mean, they did play it like they did run, like they didn't try and fight too hard, but yeah.
Right, but they do fight off quite a bit of them, right? I mean, yeah. it kind of didn't make sense to me a little bit. It was, you know, it was fun. It was good gameplay, but if you try to look at it as a more realistic thing, I think the show does a better job.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we did get a huge, like, lack of infected in the show, but I think they did do a good thing in that almost every time you see an infected, like, I can't remember who said it, but almost every single time you see an infected, there's death.
Yeah.
Like, every time we see one, someone dies, or like someone gets maimed or, you know, marked for death by a bite or something.
Exactly.
So, like, you know, they're never played off as like a nuisance. They're always just the worst thing you can imagine.
Right. Well, this game is not the worst thing I can imagine. This game is one of the better things I can imagine. This is one of my favorite games of all time. I really enjoyed replaying it. How did you enjoy your first time, Brandon?
I loved it. I was very nervous going in, obviously. I said this before, because I'm a giant horror coward, just a chicken. But the game does such a good job of kind of... I felt for the characters like than I ever expected to, especially with like an old game. Like, it really stands the test of time in a way that I just found really moving. Like, this is there's a reason why it's a lot of people's favorite game.
Right.
Even though, you know, you got some clunky, in my opinion, gameplay elements, the story is not clunky, and I don't ever foresee it being so. I had a great time, and I'm very excited to get into playing the second one.
Are we going to cover it?
I would love to. I would love to. When do you think that's a good time? Do you think it's a good time as a lead up to season two, or how would you like to do that? I guess we can obviously do this later.
Yeah, we're going to have to chat about this. I know next month we're going to be doing Jedi Fallen Order, so stick around for that. I think that we're both enjoying that. It's a definitely a less dense story, but it's a lot of fun gameplay here.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to love in, you know, the Star Wars universe. A lot to love, a lot to hate.
But, you know what? I love Star Wars. It's goofy as shit, and I'm here for the popcorn.
I'm in a room full of Star Wars things. I've been butthurt by Star Wars for a while, but it is definitely in my bones. So there's a lot to say about it, for sure.
Very cool. All right, well, I think it's time for our outro quickly. Here's our Patreon shout-outs. We have a Patreon. It's a big part of the way that we support what we're doing here. You know, there's real cost to podcasting, both in time and money. And our biggest supporters, our monthly supporters, called our Lore Masters, pay $10 a month just to get a shout out, along with, you know, downloads of our music and things like that. Ad-free, early versions, the whole deal. You get everything as a Lore Master. And here's our list of thank yous, because we are so grateful for our Lore Masters and all our patrons. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Dork of the Ninjas, Duve 71, who just upgraded from Lore Fiend, and our newest Lore Master, Brian 8063. Thank you to all of you. This is just the list of the time of recording. It could be different by the time that this gets released, but wow, we are so grateful for our supporters. Programming notes quickly. March Madness is over, but April is almost as crazy. We've got The Mandalorian Season 3 going. We've got Bad Batch and Visions. It might be out by the time this comes out, but we're talking about it. We're talking about that animated Star Wars stuff. Ted Lasso Season 3 is off to a great start at the time of this recording, and I'm sure it's going strong at that point. We are also covering The Earthsea Cycle with Marilyn R. Pukila. That's a book series that it's very short, you know, it's about 200 pages a book, and it's high fantasy, and yet it is a light read. So I hope you join us on our Firehose feed for that. Lastly, if you want more reading, we have Silmarillion Stories coming out this month. With our guest Mary Clay from That's What I'm Talking About. So I hope you'll all join us for that. We're going to be back on the Tolkien train again. Again, if you want ad-free and early access, go to patreon.com/lorehounds. If you want to chat with us and other like-minded community members, check out our Discord server, which you can find in our show notes. And as always, please like, rate, and review. Thanks for listening. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.